Welcome to the South Shore's Morning News Weekend Review Podcast. I'm Rob Hackelow. Listen for the next 30 minutes as we take a look back at some of the big interviews from the week on the South Shore's Morning News, which airs live weekdays from 5 to 10 a.m.
And as we continue with the South Shore's Morning News, we've got Rob Hackelow with us. We've got David from American Computer Technologies. We got everybody here. Rob is in incognito mode, though.
Hello.
He's at the studios hidden away in Plymouth. Dealing
good
with the COVID virus down there.
Good morning, Rob.
Hey, good morning, David.
How are we all
here
doing?
I am.
I mean, you guys just came off of COVID over the holidays, so nothing new here, huh?
So no, what's happening though? It's rampant in the state and around the country. So,
yeah,
if folks haven't gotten their shot, they should get it pretty soon.
Yikes!
Well, today we're talking technology, and today is actually the Consumer Electronics Show is out in Vegas this week. We've been hearing some pieces on that, but we want to talk about a Google settles a $5 billion privacy lawsuit over tracking users who are using the incognito mode. Which is supposed to give you some privacy, right?
Yeah, incognito, right.
Yeah.
Doesn't really mean what it says. But this month, you know, January 21st to the 27th is Data Privacy Week. But here at XMOT, we celebrate data privacy every single day. So
thank you.
This is something that we should really talk about. So a class action suit was filed back in 2020. It sought at least $5 billion in damages. And just this month, settlement terms were not disclosed, but the lawsuit covers millions of Google users since June 1st of 2016 and sought at least $5,000 in damages per user.
Mm, wow.
So that's an awful lot of money. It's quite a settlement. Now, apparently Google has agreed to settle, but the terms of the settlement have not been released yet. And they would be in charge, a federal wiretapping charge. That's it's not like it's something that's just going to go away.
No, that doesn't. No, that's a big deal. Federal, yeah, federal, and California privacy laws too.
Yeah, exactly. So you think about it. You know, many of us use incognito mode to try to stop, for instance, people from tracking us, and we come to find out that it worked a little bit, but Google still took all that information and were able to sell it.
Wow!
Wow! Wow. So wait a minute. Now, just so I understand and everybody understands, David. So, I mean, they promoted this thing. They marketed though as a way to when you go to incognito mode. So basically, this is, I mean, they're lying to people because it's not the product that people think they're getting or the service, right?
Exactly right. So in 2016, when it was first released, it was the best privacy you could have on the internet. Thank you, Google. And then over the years since then, they've updated some of the terminology on their screen when you go into incognito mode, and it says things like, we may be able to track your cookies, we may be able to do this, we may be able to do that. None of the, yeah, we're going to protect your privacy. So,
yeah, So, I mean, they were definitely trying to, I mean, because it's alluring, right? People love the idea that you could use that and you go to incognito mode. And Larry, I'm sure you saw, sometimes you'd see it be like this blackened screen or something. It was like all of a sudden in secret mode. And usually, I don't know about you, Larry, but I get suspicious when I see it in one of the production computers. Somebody's on incognito mode. It's like, what are they up to? But yeah, so they had it that way, and then they say that they won't be tracked, but in reality they did. And they must have known, David, what they were doing.
Absolutely. They always know what they're doing. And remember, you know, one thing we talk about all the time, anything that you get for free, like Google, that means that you are the product. So they're selling you to their advertisers. There's nothing for free in this world.
Well, they have to make money some way, you know.
Exactly.
And that's what they do, tracking us. And like I was at a store the other day, and I must have got 17 things when I went either on Facebook or on Instagram of chairs, because I was looking at chairs in the at some of the department stores. And the particular chair they keep sending me a picture of, is it in the store I wanted to go to, even though it says it's there? And so you read the lines down there, and they tell you exactly what the chair is and what color it is, but it's not available, I guess, at the store. You have to order it online. But it's a nice-looking chair. I just wanted to see how it would, you know, would suit me, you know.
Well, you could never see it or touch it.
See how it feels, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's the whole idea, but I mean...
It's one of our online offerings only, Larry.
Yeah, really. I mean, and as I go into the store, and of course, there's like a bunch of people, and they're all trying out the chairs and doing cell phone stuff at the same time and having conversations with people. And this one guy is saying, well, you know, the ones that you see online, they don't have the right fabric that you can get here in the store. Let me show you some of the fabric choices you have on that couch there. These are a lot better than what you would order online and have sent to your house. So, yeah, I mean... they get you one way or the other. So once you get in the store, they're not going to let you out.
Yeah. And that's where they want you.
Yeah. So searching for anything definitely, you know, is what Google wants. And so they are now, well, basically, David, what happens now? What is incognito mode is still around, right?
It is. And I'm sure they're going to have to put additional disclaimers on the home page or the front page of the incognito browser, and we'll see how that goes. The important thing to see is they've settled or they've agreed to a settlement. Let's see what that actually is, and if it actually equates to $5,000 per user for violations, then that would be a very interesting payment.
How do people prove they actually use the service? Oh, wait a minute. Google's been tracking them. That's probably how
they know you. Yeah, isn't that something?
I mean, I might have turned it on here and there. Where's my $5,000? I want to buy a new chair, you know?
Yeah, let's see where this goes. So, bottom line, guys, and, you know, we still feel that DuckDuckGo is the best private search engine. And with that, you don't even have to install it. You just visit DuckDuckGo.com and do your searches. And they are not doing an incognito type mode, but they do guarantee, like most companies will say, is that they're not tracking you. They don't have any information as to what you're doing or where you're going. But everyone needs to realize that once you get on the internet, if you're not using a VPN, everyone knows where you're going. Everyone knows what you're doing from your ISP to whomever you go and visit.
Hmm. Wow. Well, so you would definitely recommend if people do want to search without being tracked, that would be the best option right now, is the DuckDuckGo?
Today, that's the best option, to stay as private as possible. Don't know what that's going to be like in a year, but right now it's still a very viable alternative. As a matter of fact, you can see that they've started advertising on TV.
Yeah, wow. They have, yeah. And you can make that you can make that like the home page when you turn on your browser.
Sure, default browser. You can also add in an add-in to Google Chrome or to Explorer or to whatever. So that's what it would use automatically. So there's ways to get around the Google problem, and let's just see what the next problem is that comes up with our privacy and the tax on it.
Mm-hmm. And David, people can read more on your blog?
Absolutely. Go to acksmartit.com, click on my blog link, and you'll get links to DuckDuckGo and all the information about Google's $5 billion lawsuit.
David Snell.
Thank you very much. He's always scares us a little bit, but I think he's really informed us there on a better search engine to use for the now time until they track us too and try to sell me a chair that I probably won't like.
And when that happens, I'll be sure to report it here with you guys.
I'll donate the chair to your office if I don't like it. How about that?
Oh, thanks.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, you'll enjoy it. The fabric may be cheap, but you know, it'll be all right. Thank you, guys.
Have a great day, guys.
All right, bye bye. Joined with Rob Hackler in the safe COVID facility.
Hello.
That he's in. He's down his home studio. And it sounds pretty good down there. helping out with the traffic here. And, of course, we've got Peter Foreman in. And, of course, Rob knows everything that's going on, and I just kind of jump in here. So we're going to have Rob with us on this one. And, Peter Foreman, are you on the line?
I am, Larry. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm in studio.
You're doing better than Rob.
I'm doing better than Rob. I'm dousing myself with that alcohol-y stuff that everybody rubs their hands with there. So I'm trying to stay safe. I mean, you got to do what you can do, and you know, a lot of people coming down with different colds and stuff. And then Rob has said he thought it was just a cold. He took the test, and sure enough, it's COVID. Round number two for Rob.
Well, yeah. Larry, as you know, with Rob being in his home studio, there are challenges there. The lights might be too bright, and it's too warm in the home studio, or too cold, and I've got the perfect person to help outfit the home studio for perfect environment. The new chairman of our board of directors is Joe Grata, who is the president of Atlantic Mechanical. And they don't do generally residential properties, but since the home studio could be considered business, Joe could probably help Rob out to make sure that it's perfect climate control there. But Joe is... you know, we all depend on our volunteers in chambers. They're the ones who drive what we do along with our members. And with the new year, Joe is stepping up to lead this. He's a very busy person running Atlantic Mechanical. He's a real estate developer. He's our designee to the Southfield Redevelopment Authority, which oversees Union Point Development. And on the side, he's a wine enthusiast with formal training as a sommelier, which we've used at the chamber for some very nice private events.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Well, this is quite an impressive resume. All right. So we have Joe Grata on the line with us right now. Joe, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you guys for having me. I very much appreciate it. And Peter, you're welcome to read my resume aloud at any point.
Well, Joe, it's wonderful to have you on here and to meet you. And Peter was giving a little description about your company and talking about all your volunteer efforts and your time given to nonprofits. So a busy guy for sure. Tell me about the business, Atlantic Mechanical. This is a family business, right? This started out as Atlantic Refrigeration, right?
Yeah, actually, originally it was Grata Refrigeration and Air Conditioning. We lacked a bit of creativity back in our origin story, but that was 1982 when my father started it. I have since bought in with him about over 10 years ago now, and I've been running it even longer than that. But it's always fascinating working with family, right? We have to figure out where our designated skill set is and not to bump heads. That took probably longer than maybe the rest of everything else we put together there. But once we found that place, we began humming, and we really built it up. So, you know, while he's still semi-involved, he's pretty much semi-retired now. He still comes in, but now he wears shorts, so there's a slight difference to where we were back in the day. But it's always a challenge to work with family, but it is very rewarding when you do find your place.
Oh, that's great. Well, so Atlantic Mechanical has grown quite a bit, as I saw. I was just on the website, atlanticmechanical.com, and you guys do a bunch of amazing things. And you're also involved yourself, Joe, in real estate development. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about what you worked on and if there are any projects currently in the works.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, our most recent completed project, we completed through COVID, which was filled with its own series of challenges. It was a 42-unit apartment building called Weston Park over Weymouth Landing. We got commercial on the first floor. We are completely full. We have a wait list there. We pretty much understand our market, where we want to go. We have another piece of property in the Jackson Square area over in Weymouth, and we were looking at doing a similar project there now, too. I mean, we still have a very, very large deficit in housing. It's been difficult in order to be able to fill the amount of inventory that we need for the young couples that are moving into Massachusetts and in and around the areas. I mean, we know this in the chamber. That's a lot of why I work with these groups, because we understand how important housing is, because we understand the difference in shifts of demographics throughout the state of Massachusetts.
Between real estate development and a commercial building service business, what are you seeing in the economy right now, and do you have any predictions about the next year or two about this area?
Yeah, absolutely. We're seeing some pretty distinct shifts in the way the economy's functioning in Massachusetts. You know, we utilize a lot of different reporting systems in order to kind of figure out what's going to happen with Atlantic Mechanical, with real estate development. For the most part, there's a lot of architectural starts, and then that we look at as sort of a six-month look ahead, right? This tells us what's going to be being built over the next few years. And almost everybody from the financial sector to the architectural sectors is seeing things slow down. And that's happening mostly as a result of these higher interest rates that are trying to battle inflation over the last, well, a few years now. So as a result of that, things have been more of a wait-and-see approach. And unfortunately, that's going to hurt a lot of what we're looking at in the construction field. I think what's going to end up happening, now that we're seeing some of the rates sort of level off and our 30-year amortization rate has gone down quite a bit, and I think the Goldman had pinned that around 6.25% as their target rate at the end of 2024, we're going to see a little bit more resilience here. Something's going to come back. We still know we have a deficit in housing, but that's going to come to an increase in rent, an increase in some of the costs for housing ownership because our inventory is still not high enough. I think we're going to see maybe the longest-awaited recession touch just a little bit. It's not going to be as bad. The soft landing might have happened. But it's going to all depend upon how the general public sort of absorbs what happens in the election next year and the way that that banking approach can possibly change what the government does in terms of controlling their rates. And that pretty much is the driving factor behind almost everything in construction.
Wow. Now, Joe, Union Point, we talked about your involvement with Union Point, ended 2023 getting approval on rezoning from Weymouth, Abington, and Rockland. What are the next steps, and what does this mean for the region?
It's probably one of the largest regional projects that exist, and has had this tremendous potential for years and years. So we finally reached a point that I think is more advantageous than it's ever been. We have the right teams there, the right developers. This hasn't happened really ever. And now that the zoning's passed all three towns, which was one of the larger hurdles, we're looking at infrastructure. Being able to get water and wastewater to this area is going to be one of the biggest pieces. And that's not just isolated to Union Point. That goes throughout the entirety of the South Shore. There are a series of towns here that cannot continue to grow at the pace that they should be without being able to consult these water and wastewater issues that they've had for quite some time. So this will be a nice way to highlight what's happening here in the region, because it's a necessity for this project and it's a necessity for the rest of the region.
And what's ahead for the chamber this year that you're excited to look forward to and will be working on?
Well, hey, that's part of it, too. I mean, if you listen to Peter enough, you'll know we're going to talk about water and wastewater for years. So that's certainly a highlight there on its own. But other than that, I mean, we were finally coming back to full force in all of our member events. And we had co-sponsored the Best of South Shore last year. That had 400 attendees, and that was sold out. It was a great success. It was an absolutely wonderful event. And we have a series of others coming up now. We have different speakers and smaller events that now allow us to sort of gather with more engagement, with more leaders that are local, and be able to talk about things that are particularly relevant to those groups. So we're very excited about some of the changes that have taken place here.
Oh, that's great. Well, best of luck, Joe, in your new role as chair of the board for the South Shore Chamber. Joe Grotta, president and CEO of a second-generation business, Atlantic Mechanical, AtlanticMechanical.com is the website. And, Joe, thank you.
Oh, my absolute pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Peter, thank you.
Thank you, and I'm looking forward to a good year with Joe heading up the board of directors.
Good stuff ahead. South Shore Chamber of Commerce. SouthShoreChamber.org. Peter Foreman is here on WATD. Time now for our Paws in Claws segment on WATD, sponsored by our good friends at the Clean Team. Even the best pets can't clean up their own mess. Call the Clean Team to take care of all those catastrophes and doggy dilemmas. TheCleanTeam.net, TheCleanTeam.net. And this is great, Larry. We're going to be doing now in 2024 is on the second Tuesday of every month. We're going to bring on one of the great team members from the great group at Cape Cod Veterinary Specialists, CapeCodVetSpecialist.com, CCVS. And so to kind of start things off here, we're going to be getting to talk to some of the great team members, including a name we have talked to in the past. Dr. Kira Berg is with us. She is a zoo exotics veterinary specialist. Dr. Kira Berg has been with us on in the past. We've had her on our Paws and Claws segment, and she's really just talented and just a wealth of knowledge, and we wanted to have her back on the radio, and for some reason she agreed. Dr. Berg, are you there?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Well, good morning and welcome. Great to have you on WATD in 2024.
Yeah, good morning. Happy New Year. I'm really happy to be back.
Yeah, so this will be fun. So we're going to do this on the second, as I mentioned, second Tuesday of every month as we kind of rotate through some of our pet and animal experts. So this might be a good time. Dr. Berg, I know we didn't really have time to talk about what topic you were going to discuss for the week. So why don't you tell us a little bit about maybe your background for the new listeners. Tell us about yourself, and then we'll get into we'll talk about something that you want.
Yeah, that sounds great. So for some background, I am a Mass native. I have been all over the country for the past 13 years for veterinary school internships, residency, followed by my specialty examination. So I am considered a board-certified specialist in zoological medicine. So I've obviously done quite a bit to make sure that, you know, my education is as best as I could possibly make it. I am now the only specialist in Cape Cod, as well as in the South Shore area for Massachusetts. It's a great honor to be able to start a service in Cape Cod for the exotics. At this hospital where we have, you know, all the bells and whistles that we would really need, so like CT, endoscopy, everything that I would need to be able to provide not only premier primary care, but really advanced referral care, which hasn't been available in the Cape before. And then just a little bit in going into what Rob was talking about, I'm going to be on every other month. And then what's super cool this year is that we have a veterinary technician specialist in exotics, and she is one of 15 in the country right now and one of only two in the state of Massachusetts. So she is a phenomenal resource when it comes to exotics, and she's also going to be talking. So we're super excited to have her. Her name is Lorelei, and she's one of the technicians I work with every day.
Oh, that's great. So
yeah, so super, super special. And then today I was hoping to talk about rabbit hemorrhagic disease virus.
Oh, okay. It sounds like a mouthful. Okay, yeah. fill us in.
Yeah. So that obviously gets shortened to RHDV. And while we were, as humans, going through the COVID pandemic, unfortunately, there was a pandemic in rabbits that was also happening. And it started in Europe and Asia and unfortunately did make its way over to North America, affecting Mexico and the Southwest first, spreading up California into Oregon and Washington. And basically the best way that I can describe it to everyone to really understand the severity of this disease is that it is the Ebola of infections in rabbits, and it spreads very, very rapidly. It has an 89% mortality rate or higher when it comes to domestic rabbits as well as wild rabbits. The way that it gets spread is every route of transmission possible, so fecal-oral, so if the bunny ingests poop or touches nasal nose-to-nose transmission, it's aerosolized, so it's in the air. And then also, many rabbits have become infected because, actually, it's really sad, owners walking on the streets somehow pick up this viral pathogen and transmit it on their shoes or in their clothes and then bring it home.
Oh, wow.
So it's a really terrible, really terrible virus that unfortunately is, you know, not going to be cause for happy discussion today, but is really important that everyone is aware that this is an actively ongoing infection in the United States.
Sure. Well, Dr. Berg, I mean, you mentioned obviously, so this would affect wild and domestic rabbits. When people generally have rabbits as pets, in most instances, not always, typically there'll be more than one. So I would imagine that could be a concern if you mentioned this is spread so easily. Most times rabbits are in groups, right?
Yes, yeah, they are actually social. They do better in at least pairs. So you're right that hopefully most households are going to have more than one bunny, but that does mean that if one gets sick, there is a very, very high likelihood of the other one getting sick. And again, unfortunately, the mortality rate is so high that there's high risk of losing both bunnies.
No, I was just going to say, what advice would you have for people that are listening this morning that are bunny owners that want to avoid, just taking some steps maybe just to slow this thing down or avoid it?
Yeah, absolutely. So the good news is that so far it has not been documented in Massachusetts, but it has been documented in surrounding states a couple years ago, but still the concern is always there. So making sure that, if you have pet bunnies, try to really, and if you work in a wildlife rehab setting, you have to make sure that we're being as separate as possible between clothes and showering between, working with wildlife and then going to be with your pet bunnies, trying to not bring your bunnies to rabbit shows or rabbit breeders, and certainly making sure that your vet is, aware that you have bunnies and that you're concerned about this. So being as careful as possible when it comes to protecting your rabbits and the environment that you have at home. The good news that I can share with everyone is that Massachusetts has recently approved the use of the only USDA-approved vaccine for rabbits. And so that is available in Massachusetts now, not at many clinics yet, because we're just now, getting out the approval. So, hospitals are ordering it. We do have that vaccine available at Cape Cod Veterinary Specialists. And so be on the lookout for a couple of vaccine clinics that we're going to be coordinating for South Shore Cape area. But certainly there is a vaccine available. So definitely talk to your vet about that. There's an initial vaccine, and then 3 weeks later, a booster to be protective.
All right, good advice and good information and important information to get out, certainly, and that's why Dr. Berg is going to be with us every other month, and of course on the second Tuesday of every month as we go into 2024, we'll be talking to the great team members at Cape Cod Veterinary Specialists joining us in part of our rotation of experts on paws and claws. Dr. Kira Berg is a zoo exotics veterinary specialist. Dr. Berg, thank you for coming on the program today, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I hope you feel better.
Oh, thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. As always, you can find us on your radio at 95.9 FM, mornings from 5 to 10, or online at 95.9WATD.com.
And you can catch up with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can get the links at 95.9WATD.com/SS Morning News. And join us next week for another edition of the South Shore's Morning News Week in Review.